we have a guest with us today, reading scripture. No, David Orendorf. Thanks you, David. Yes.
Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth was full of his glory. The pivots on the threshold shook at the voices of those who called, and the house filled with smoke. And I said, woe is me, I'm lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. Yet my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then one of the seraphim flew to me, holding a live coal that had been taken from the altar with a pair of tongs. The seraph touched my mouth with it and said, now that this has touched your lips, your guilt has departed, and your sin is blotted out. Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? I said, here am I. Send me. Word of the Lord for God's people.
Be to God. So I've been watching this podcast called 30 Bach, and I encourage you to do this. It's a cool podcast about the Goldberg Variations, which are the piano variations that Bach has, and probably one of the most beloved pieces of music in our culture and our world. And in it, there's a woman who plays piano, Angela Hewitt, fantastic piano player, world-renowned. And she talks about how she was always a good piano player, but she wasn't sure that it was her vocation. Okay, and so I want you to think about that for a minute. She was always a good piano player. She had all the gifts, but she wasn't sure it was her vocation. And I want to ask that just question, what does that mean? What's the difference between being a great piano player and being a great piano player with a vocation for playing piano? And she goes on to say that about college years, which happens to a lot of us, she had a meltdown, a total meltdown, because she began to question whether she really was going to do this for a living, that this was going to be, was this her vocation? Is this what God really wanted her to do? Or was this what she was made to do in the world, right? Is this the greater purpose for her? So she started trying on other clothes, you know. She went and she studied theology for a while, thinking, maybe I might be a pastor. She went and studied science for a while, thinking she might be an engineer. But one day, and then right in the middle of this, her body failed her, and she could not play the piano anymore. And in the midst of that loss of that piano playing, she found a moment where she felt God saying, this truly is your vocation. You need to play the piano. And she went to doctors to try to get it fixed, but in the end, it just gradually went away, and she started playing the piano again, and then she just seemed to know that was her vocation. That was her calling. Now look, this word calling and vocation is a dangerous word. It can damage people. I have a sister, for instance, who struggled all of her life with what her vocation is, you know. She's always been a great mother, always been a great friend, but she's never had that great career, you know, that just tops it all off, you know. And so a lot of times when we start talking about vocation or when preachers start talking about it, she gets so guilty as if she hasn't fulfilled God's word, hasn't fulfilled God's purpose in her life. And yet she's been an incredible mother. And yet she's been the best caregiver of our family for my mother. Can that be a calling? Can that be a part of a vocation? I don't know if you've been watching the Olympics, but Freddie Richard, has any of you watched the gymnast? Freddie Richard is the African-American guy who's, he didn't do so well in the all-around, but he did great in the team competition and helped the U.S. win the bronze medal, the first bronze medal we've had for over 20 years in that sport for men. And if you get a chance to look him up, especially on TikTok or something, he sounds so braggy. You know, it seems like he's just in these Olympics to, you know, kind of push his name out there and, you know, have a platform, right? And use these Olympics to do that. But when you hear him interviewed, you begin to realize, no, he's not, because he wants to use who he is to help other gymnasts of color start getting into gymnastics. So he's using it as a forum to better the world. And for some reason, for me, that helps me accept his bodaciousness a little bit more, right? I mean, because he's doing it for a purpose, right? He sees himself as someone who has a platform for something greater in the world. That might be a definition for a vocation or a calling. But there is, as I said, some problems with the calling of God for many of us. And we read it, as David read it, in Isaiah. As soon, he's in the, you know, the temple, right? And there's incense going. I mean, I don't know what he's taking, but he's seeing all sorts of things, right? He's got these visions going on. And God flies in, and the first thing he feels when God is present is what? Guilt. Shame. I'm not good enough. And I think, for me, that's been the struggle when I talk to people in the church about calling. So often, they think they're just not good enough for God to use them. Or they're not good enough to be a pastor, or they're not good enough to be a great plumber who serves the world, or they're not good enough to have God use their gifts for something greater in the world. They're just not clean enough, right? Their story isn't good enough. They don't have enough upbringing to be this. You know, I have a question for you this morning. I've been thinking about this. What's the smallest moment in your life? When's the moment in your life you just felt the most incomplete or the smallest in your life? When I was in college, I loved music, and I wanted to be a conductor of a great symphony. Now, maybe going to Dakota Wesleyan University might have told me that might have been a problem, but I really thought I could be a fantastic symphonic conductor. I remember I would break into the music hall in the middle of the night just to go in there and practice in my mind, you know, directing a great symphony, you know, and oh, I was so excited about that. And I thought my route was going to be playing the French horn first. I was a French horn player. I majored in playing the French horn. And so one year, my professor, I only had one in music, this was a small school, he said, I think you should go to Chautauqua this year for the summer. And Chautauqua is a summer camp in New York. And at Chautauqua, the New York Symphony summers there. So you get to take lessons for some awesome folks. And so he got me lessons for the principal chair there at the, you know, at the French horn studio there at Chautauqua. And there are 38 other French horn players there. And they're all better than I am. I mean, they just wiped me off the map, you know. And I felt like a hayseed from South Dakota, you know. I just felt so small. at that moment. And it was a moment where I began to kind of just realize, wait a minute, I'm not going to be that person. I'm not that good. I don't have all those gifts. And it was such a small time for my life. And I actually wondered, do I have any gifts? There were moments in my life I wondered if I really was going to be able to do anything in this world. And I remember going back to school that fall, just down at my lowest. You ever had a moment like that? You know, when you shrink and you see yourself small, so small. When I was just came out of seminary and I came back to the Dakotas to serve as a pastor, I was at a camp, and it was called LTC. It was for senior high kids, a leadership camp, leadership training camp. And it was a great camp. There were like 200 kids there, and they were all pumped up for God. But during that time, the big thing was we had an election for the youth council for the state, right? And there were 12 disciples. There were 12 people that got elected, and they interviewed, and we all voted, and there were pastors who voted too. But you know how youth are. At least I was at that age. Popular kids had an amazing advantage. I mean, the good-looking kids, the well-spoken kids, the kids could that had a sense of humor. Everybody voted for them, and I had a kid, a girl in my youth group in Geddes, South Dakota, who wasn't beautiful by most youth standards. She was beautiful inside. She had a great spirit. She had a great faith. And she interviewed and she shared. She didn't get a vote at that camp. And at the end of the camp, the last day, what happened was we installed these 12 leaders, and we had this big installation service, and it was at night, and there were 12 seats up here, and everybody else, all the other kids, were back over here, and and so they would call their name, those who made it, all these good-looking, popular kids. I don't know if they had a faith at all, to be honest, but they were up there, and they gave them a gold cross, you know. Nobody else got one, just these 12. And they sat there, and then they gave those 12 candles. Nobody else candles. Girl, my church, was bawling her eyes out. Wondered, why not me? Who am I? I remember three of us during that service, as we witnessed that, we ran to the back of the church and found all the candles for candlelight service, and we passed them out. We took the 12th candle, we passed it around to everyone, and we told them, you're called too. You're a disciple too. Not just these 12, it's all of you. You are. Now, I've gone back and checked. You know how many people in that whole group went into the ministry? 4. Not one of the 12. But this bunch. That is sometimes problem we have with calling. Some of it is also that we see calling only as something we do in the church, right? You're called to God, you have to be called to be in the church, but that's not true. You can be a great business owner and be called to be a business owner. God can use that ownership for something greater. You can be a nurse, you can be a doctor, you can be a teacher, you can be a lawyer, you can be anything, and God can use your gifts for some greater platform for this world. When I was a little guy, I went to camp as a fourth grader, and I had a camp counselor named Donna Fisher, and she was a little out there for me. You know, she was just so boisterous, and she loved, dancing and art dancing and all that kind of stuff. That was not my cup of tea, but one day she talked me into being in the dance group, the only kid boy in there. And I felt at first just so awkward, and I just, using half my body, half my, you've seen this, somebody trying to dance who just doesn't feel very good at it. But in the middle of that, something, as I began to practice, something changed in me. And I began to realize that I had arms that stretched way out here. And I had a smile, and I had a body that I could use. And I just opened up, and I danced. Years later, her husband used to tell a story about Pentecost. And he said, he told a story of a dancer just like me who found a new way to be in the midst of that camp, in that dancing class. And he said, somehow, God had knocked the walls out of that young man and raised the roof. And that is exactly how I felt when I was doing that. And he said, that is exactly what happens when the church comes alive and when Pentecost comes into our lives. Each of us began to realize that this isn't just for ordained elders, that this calling is for each and every one of us. Now, you may know that I do not wear a robe. And it's not because I'm not ordained. I am. I don't wear a robe because I don't believe in that distance. I don't believe that I'm called any differently than you all are. You and I are one. You are called. Today, may you find your half-extended arms reaching out all the way. And may God use you, every piece of you, wherever you are, to make this world a better place. And all the people said, Cassie is going to sing for us a solo called You Say.